Welcome to the Bougie Black Brother Network.
Hello today. Thank you for tuning in. This is Sean from Bougie Black Brother Network, and you are listening to the Hidden Gems podcast, the great entrepreneur movement. And today we have a very special guest, the great Dr. Lakeisha Hallman. How are you doing today, Dr. Lakeisha?
I'm doing very well today. I'm doing very well. It's a beautiful day in Atlanta. It's a great day for a podcast interview and to talk about entrepreneurship. So I'm doing great.
Beautiful, beautiful. The first thing I actually want to get into you about is your beautiful hair. I love your hair. I love your locks. They're amazing. What made you go natural, and how long have you had them?
I've been natural for over 10 years. I think I made, or maybe 11 years.
Okay.
Before my locks, I rocked my big Angela Davis fro, and I felt like Angela Davis every day that I had my fro. And after that, I decided to make the transition to locking my hair. Like anything else, change is good.
Right.
But I didn't go, though I locked my hair is still natural.
Right.
I decided to make that change. Primarily because it fit who I was. You know, when you learn more, then your life and your environment changes.
Exactly.
The foods that I was consuming were natural, so I couldn't put unnatural products on my scalp and expect for my hair to be as healthy as my body was. So it was an easy, no-brainer for me to now at that time to go ahead and be natural.
Well, you really look awesome with them. They totally fit you. Like I could have just imagined seeing you with the fro. I know you was like super powerful with the fro. But you were talking about your food and your diet. Tell me a little bit about your diet.
I am 100% plant-based. So that means I do not consume any animal products. And with being plant-based, I'm also soy-free as well.
Okay.
And I try to, with my foods and with beverages that I consume, I strive to make sure that they're chemical-free because I just know how important our health is. And I think about we're extremely diverse as people.
Right.
And the subcultures in our community, but there's a linkage that we all have, and there's illness. And what we have in common is the foods that we eat. So I just began to process that, how so many people I know who are sick and how so many people who I don't know personally are also sick. So mm-hmm. What do we have in common? And it's food. And I decided to make that transition, of course, with some personal experiences as well. I just wanted to be healthier. I've seen the effects of not being healthy. And as long as there's life, I want to be able to live in vitality. And I think that comes with our foods.
Yes, that you're absolutely right. I actually enjoy eating vegetable based. I'm not a big cooker, so I tend to slip up a few times. But I love like I'm just not really a big meat eater fan. But a lot of people around me tend to ask a lot of questions on why. I've been doing it for some time. So, my next question is, how do you help other people that's trying to transition be comfortable with it? Like, basically, do you help people with their vegetable base or their diet?
Yes, I do. I help people primarily, by being consistent. So if I hung out with some of my friends or people in the community, what I eat in a public space is so different than what I eat at home.
Right.
So that lifestyle change is probably my first classroom. so people see exactly who I am, and it shows up in different spaces. But I think, you know, Sean, the biggest thing with making health transitions is to understand that it's unrooting everything that we've known about our identity. And that's even how we think about our holiday meals and how we celebrate our birth and our birthdays. Food has always been an association with happiness and celebration.
Right.
So when we begin to talk to people about health, I think we have to be conscious and compassionate where, how do we do this in a way that people feel safe and not intimidated and also not judged? That's one of the reasons why the Village Market itself is vegan, plant-based. That's not something that I advertise. It almost surprises people, you know, when they come in and all the food is vegan and plant-based. I couldn't imagine any other way to do it rather than have people just try food and it tastes good.
Yes.
It so happens to be vegan. That's better than forcing a documentary or a book or a lecture in front of you or make you feel some sense of, judgment for loving mac and cheese. We all love mac and cheese, but you can have it differently. So I think that's the biggest way I teach. I teach in a way that it's important for people to know, number one, that I am from Mississippi.
Right.
So whatever you are eating, I haven't eaten myself. A lot of people in my family still eat, so there's no place of judgment.
Okay.
And that change takes time.
Yeah. Yes, it does.
Yeah, it just takes time. I think that's what we can do better in the community. You know, when we get to a place of awareness, just to remember where we've been.
And just be patient with everyone else and give them the time that you got when you are going through
it.
Gotcha.
And to show them in steps rather than giving them this whole recipe book. Just give them one recipe. Because it's so intimidating when you're unearthing everything that you know to be true about your identity.
Yeah, very true. Very true. So you're a big teacher. You've been speaking on it right now. So what started you down the teaching path? What made you say when you got out of high school, okay, I'm going to go and study and start teaching?
You know, it's one of those things. I think we've all had experiences when we were in school in those primary years when the teacher said, what do you want to do? What do you want to be when you grow up?
Mm-hmm.
And I always knew that I wanted to be a teacher. So my answer was always that.
Okay.
My dad would say, no, you won't be a teacher. They don't make any money. And it still, I heard him, but it stayed with me. And I knew that I was meant to be a teacher. So it was, again, it's just one of those things that I knew I was called and created to be. Now, the teaching has changed forms for me in a sense, but I'll teach until there's no more breath in my body because this is a part of who I am. And I started teaching. I had my first class. I was an English teacher for 9 years.
Where was it at?
I had my first class in Mississippi.
Okay.
I taught in the Mississippi Delta for 5 years. I was fresh out of college. So 22 years old, and I had 18-year-olds. But it was such an amazing experience. I always go back in my memory and I say, was college the best, or was it my first 5 years in the classroom? I'm not sure.
Right.
They both were so good for me. But that grew me up, in a sense.
How was it being so close in age range teaching them?
You know, I had to grow up.
Mm-hmm.
I was just, you know, I went to HBCU, so I was fresh off the yard. I was fresh, you know, I was just strutting 2 or 3 months ago,
right,
you know, with my sorority. So I remember, you know, being 22 and driving to campus, and I was still listening to LaBoosie, okay? And then I have to go into the classroom and be this grown up.
Right.
But what I did was to, it just hit me that it's okay to truly be 22.
Right.
But it's not okay to be immature with how I conduct myself with my students. So I always conducted myself probably as if I was 32. But what linked us and how we were able to have a good relationship, because the same music that I like, a lot of my kids like, and that drove my lessons in English.
Got you. Oh, so that you kind of channeled hip hop, so to speak, to connect to your students.
Yeah, so we're doing Othello, and the soundtrack would be whatever song it was, whatever song at that time. And because that's what I enjoy, and that's what my students enjoy. And I think in education, relationships are key. They're vital.
Yes.
And I learned it early, and that has worked for me in the classroom, outside of the classroom, just trying to find that commonality that people can relate to you. In music, I have the kids listening to blues. I don't know if you guys remember Malachi here in Atlanta. I would play Malachi because I spent a lot of time in Atlanta while I was in Mississippi. And then we infuse in a little Boosie or whomever to talk about internal conflict and external conflict and basing that into our community. But it's the relatability.
Okay. I like that. That's very unique. The way you put those two together to enlighten the students. Was there anything that surprised you on your path as a teacher over time?
Yeah. When you're really young and you're naive, naiveness is sometimes is really good.
Mm-hmm.
You think that everybody is in it for the same reason. And equally, you think that you can save everybody. You think every child that you have, just because you love them, they're going to graduate and they're going to matriculate into this amazing person because you love them so much.
Right.
You want the best for them. So I think what surprised me was that, you can work extremely hard and you won't be able to save every student. And you can also work extremely hard and have a neighboring teacher whose interest is not that of saving students. It's a job.
Right. Yeah. That's it.
So I think that was my biggest aha. And we need to understand that we can't save everybody because that's not our work to do.
Right.
So I learned that painfully young. I've had students who transition and be murdered.
Wow.
So that was, those are painful experiences for me. And also I had some of my favorite young men drop out of school. And even in my tears of pleading, no, do not drop out. There's something greater for you. You just have to stick this out. They still dropped out.
And it was nothing that you had no control over.
Tremendously.
That was painful at times. I could just imagine.
So. Yeah. But, we can't save everyone. We can only do the work that, that we've been created to do.
So what have you ever taught in a non-minority school?
Oh, yes. I've been fortunate that I've taught in rural schools, inner city schools, and more ethnicity diverse schools. So yes, I have experience with three totally different demographics.
Okay, so can you tell me? Can you kind of let me know about the non-minority experience and the difference between the non-minority and minority schools?
There are some differences, but it's not the differences, that we would probably initially think.
Okay.
From my experiences in non-minority schools, the students are the same, that if you relate to them, they want to learn and they want to learn from you.
Right.
They trust everything that you say. And then some disparities that I noticed between minority and non-minority schools. And when I think of minority, I think of the fiscal responsibility of the school.
Okay.
So the have and the have not.
Right.
That's how I see it.
Right,
Rather than it being race, I see it as
exactly.
Socioeconomic. The amount of resources that are given to the have schools versus that of the have not. So it gives the perception that primarily Black parents of color do not support or want greater opportunities for their children. But the infrastructure is set up totally different. So non-minority or more affluent schools they will always have the best teachers. They will always have the best technology labs. So because they are rooted and nurtured in such a way, you see kids graduating and going out to the top tier schools, but they've been cultivated and cultured to do this.
Right. Not just 4 years. I got you. So the non-minority schools, I would say it's a more than 4 years of grooming to get them where they're at.
Right. It starts before kindergarten.
Okay.
Because the environment,
right,
has a vision. The community has a vision of what they want from those young people.
Okay. Okay.
And it's not that minority students do not have that same vision, but it's harder to manifest that vision if you're dealing with making sure that you have enough computers and enough books and enough teachers.
And teachers that want to teach.
Teachers who want to teach and teachers who are not just there to get their student loans paid back, but teachers who are passionate about teaching.
So is there any difference between small town, inner city and bigger city schools?
Oh, yeah, there are big differences. And again, you know what, from my experience, when I was teaching in the Mississippi Delta, a lot of my students were raised by their grandparents.
Oh.
And yeah. And more so raised by a village. But their primary caregiver, a good chance that, you know, is their grandparents, if not their parents. And the inner city kids, they grow up. And again, this is from my experience. So mm-hmm. I don't want to stereotype. They grow up a lot faster. So the way they move about life is just different. Whereas my rural kids, they were so afraid of, like, getting in trouble with their grandmother.
Right.
So that that alone was enough.
Okay.
My experience with some kids who grew up in the inner city, just their life experiences have grown them in such a way that forced them into adulthood and forced them into responsibility,
mm-hmm.
that they don't really fear who the person at home is, because they're probably the person at home who is responsible right. for paying the bills.
Okay.
So you're almost teaching an adult.
Right, right. Oh, wow. That is very interesting. So how did you come about starting Young Gifted in Black?
I've always been, a great deal of my life has been spent in service.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when I was young, I remember when we had our first Boys and Girls Club in Basin, Mississippi. I volunteered there, and that was one of the places I got my first job and also one of my first scholarships.
Okay.
To school. And I start, you know, telling the story there because that's where my service work came in. So being able to, you know, moving forward and doing Young Gifted in Black, it's just more so a continuation of work I've been doing. And for me in Atlanta, I only do things that make sense to me and things that I know that I can do justice to.
Okay.
I'm a cyclist, so it only makes sense to me to do my my event called Take It to the Street. And that's when we ride to do good in our communities. But that makes sense to me. I believe in giving back to our homeless brothers and sisters who are in need. Or our brothers and sisters who are in need, period. And I believe in cycling and being fit.
Right.
So I just put those two interests together to bring the community out where we can ride, we can give at the same time, and then we can humanize the people that we drive past in our cars.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And the master classes that we do, you know, it's because I'm a teacher. I think the best way, if you want community to change, is to teach the community what change looks like and how to get there.
Yeah, you can't do it behind a computer or in front of a TV, that's for sure.
Yeah, or you can't do it with the expectation that everyone knows how to do it.
Exactly,
there's so
yeah.
many, like, for instance, people want to open a business, but you still need to be taught how.
Right.
How do you put this vision into a business plan and make it sustainable?
Real quick, how often do you do your cycling events?
We do those every 2 months.
Okay.
During warm months, we do them every month because it's just a lot of fun. And during those cycling events, we do pop-up mobile grooming stations. So I could be out leading a bike ride, but I have barbers who are volunteer who have generators going in different parts of Atlanta, and they're giving haircuts.
Right. Okay.
To those who are in need.
You so plugged, man. You got a lot of tentacles on you. That's like for real, for real. So let me know some of the things that you've accomplished with Young, Great, and Black.
The things we've been able to give. I do a big holiday gathering around the Christmas season every year. So we've been able to adopt the Genesis Women and Infant Shelter.
Okay.
So we adopted that shelter, and we were able to take care of the parents and their kids for the holiday season. I've been doing that for 5 years. So we've adopted so many homeless shelters, foster care centers for the holiday season. As far as like personal awards and things, you know, we haven't, other than having gratitude for doing it,
right,
we haven't really gotten any, you know, like awards or recognition in that way, you know, which of course is fine, but it's just gratifying and just to do the work.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know how to connect with people. That's a gift. That's a talent. That is something that a lot of people on this earth just don't have. And you definitely have that ability. When did you figure out, like, okay, it's easy to talk to new people. It's easy to meet new people. You know, it's easy to manifest a meeting with somebody and connecting with them. How did that come about? Or when did you realize you were able to do that so easy?
Oh, that's a good question. I think some things are within your DNA, within your blueprint of how you're supposed to show up in the world.
Right.
So being able to somewhat manifest what I need, I think that's a part of my DNA because it helps inform the work. But I think when I realized that I can build and foster relationships, probably came in high school.
Okay.
Because I was just able to just connect to a lot of different and diverse people. And that put me in different spaces that when you're from the country of Mississippi, people don't understand how you got there. How did you get into this space? How did you get, you know, asked to come to this particular meeting?
Right.
And I think, honestly, Sean, I'm still seeing it, and I'm still so surprised by life sometimes. So I'm, even in, you know, in my age now, it still surprises me that some of the opportunities that come about and the people that I've been so fortunate to meet and connect with. So I have my, like, wow moment right now.
Yeah, because just Sunday, I ran into you at the Hip Hop Beats. Is that what it's called?
At the
A Seat at the Table. But how did you get to that event?
Dr. Kalisha reached, the founder of Heartbeats and Hip Hop. She reached out to me about being a part of that panel. And I knew three other panelists as well, but that's just through other work in the community.
Right.
But Heartbeats and Hip Hop reached out to us because of the work that's happening in the community and the influence of the Village Market.
I really enjoyed that panel. You guys really touched on a lot of things. I really can't wait for the next one. I'm just a sponge for knowledge. I really am. So let's go ahead and get into the Village Market ATL. How long have you been doing that?
The Village Market, it has been a little bit over a year. April was our first year. So we've had 5 markets. We do them quarterly.
Okay.
So we're right over a year old. So now we can probably properly walk.
Yeah. Okay, so everybody knows you. You got a good wind of things. You know how, like, basically how the vendors will come about. If you could, not trying to get into your secret, what's your process on setting up your Village Market ATL? Just briefly.
The process for setting up for me is, number one, making sure that we properly vetted vendors.
Mm-hmm.
I think we must be intentional in everything that we do. So you have to bring forth the best of the best to the village when it's a public display of our gifts and talents.
Right.
And to understand that there's a spectrum of best, right? So we spend a lot of time, my team and myself, going through vendor applications, looking at websites, looking at social media, and making sure that these are businesses that could be getting off the ground or have been growing, but also we look at to see what is their direct relationship in the community.
Right.
So that's important. That's our number one thing that we do.
It's not necessarily about the business. It's more about you working with the community and contributing to the community.
Yes, because I know that when we do the village markets, the community is going to pour into these businesses.
Right.
So it's important that before this pouring happens, our entrepreneurs have also done their due diligence to pour.
Right. So, and I totally agree with that, because it's like a lot of black businesses out here will say they're black, but won't have nothing to do with the community, you know, don't even know about Village Market ATL, but you know, they're promoting black business and they want people to do the same, but it never comes in return. So that's a good point. Have you actually experienced that within the events that you've had?
Have I experienced what?
Experienced a business that is not necessarily full throttle with the community.
Yes, yes, I have. And you know, Sean, that part that I am 100% okay with.
Okay.
Because it's just a teaching and a teachable moment. It's the same with experiencing people who never had plant-based meals.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So I look at it the exact same. And you have to think about it. We've been acculturated a certain way. So we think business, we think of financial come up, and we should, because only through wealth do we get our financial independence.
Right.
So I don't speak against businesses being profitable, but I do encourage business owners, those of who you don't have to be affiliated with the village market, to make sure that in your profits that your village is also reaping. And so, yeah, I've seen that, but I do, I lead with the sensitivity that we've been cultured a certain way. We've been cultured to get.
Mm-hmm.
And there are so many systemic things that's in place that why we've been indoctrinated and why we lead that way. So I'm sensitive to that.
Okay, so out of all the businesses that you've seen over the years, what would be your advice to a new business to try to help them not make any early mistakes in their endeavors?
The top advice, I think, to always consider your customer.
Right.
Always consider the people that you're servicing, and be very clear on what type of product you're producing, and ensure that your quality is where it needs to be. So quality and customer service are extremely important to me. I think, you know, things like business plans, those are good, but I think you can be taught that in a sense. You can have some business classes where you can learn how to create a business plan, how to get your budget together. Those things are important. But I think the intentionality of the building is think first your customer, and then think of the quality of your product, because when those customers come, are they investing in something that's of quality? So those are the two big things. That's the advice that I always give entrepreneurs or startups. How are you ensuring that quality is there? And how will you take care of your customers? And how do you make sure that customer returns to you?
Right. Yeah, that return customer is very important. So
yes, it is.
You seem to definitely be almost in a lane of your own. That's what's so special about you. You're so consistent with your events. You're so consistent with showing your face and the things that you do, that all of this is really going to blossom, like, come the next 2 years. But that's just what I've seen. How do you feel like you're different from you and your peers?
You said, how do I feel like I'm different from what I do and probably others who are similar?
What stands out from you and your peers?
I think what the Village Market and some of our undertakings unique is that this particular blueprint wasn't modeled after anything else.
Right.
Yeah, so we didn't take a blueprint and kind of tweak it to make it ours. The blueprint came very organically. So what you see is just an organic manifestation. I think there are great doers and great creators in the city. The Village Market is just, we're a pocket of that growing change. So I think just our originality of what we're doing, with the understanding that we're part of a greater puzzle, though. So I think, you know, we have to be clear to make sure that we're not divisive in our language, but just know that originality is one of our areas. So we are very original with making sure that we give empowerment vouchers out to the community. We're very, you know, the level of classes and thought that we put into our vendors before the actual Village Market show itself. But again, there are other great events in the city as well that's doing really good work.
Okay. Have you got any backlash from any of your events, particularly Village Market of Atlanta?
Not yet. At least none that made it to me. You know, I'm sure with anything there will always be a critique. So not as of yet. You know, when we initially started, some of the constructive feedback from our vendors would be more placement and things like that, or how we may do our floor layout. So
right.
We appreciate that, so we can, you know, make sure our next model is different. That's why it's good to get feedback. But as far as just somewhat negative criticism, not that have made it to my desk or my phone or my email. but I'm sure that there has to be some form of critique, because that's a part of our nature as well.
Right. Now, I did listen to one of your recent interviews. You talked very highly of your family. So my question is, based off of your family, how major do you feel like their impact is in influencing your achievements and your path going down where you are now?
Oh, you know, my family, I credit them and, of course, God to everything. So when you see me and you see the work that I do, especially in the realm of entrepreneurship, that comes directly from my paternal grandmother.
Mm.
She was an entrepreneur since she was 13 years old. And I've only seen her work for her. She was a seamstress. So that spirit of having something in your mind, you're creating it and people paying for it, that's in my bloodline. And also with my grandmother, again, I remember her going over and over and over patterns and designs that she would come up with.
Right.
And I would say, why are you going over this so much? And she said it because she would say it's because it has to be excellent.
Mm.
And that's before I told her, I joke with her now, she's 80 years old, that she was like black girl magic and black excellence before it was a hashtag.
Right.
She has no idea what any of this means, but I tell her anyway. But that's so when you see me, you see them.
Right.
And I'm truly a reflection. My mother was probably one of the biggest givers that I've ever met in my life, so much that it would annoy me that she would give so much.
Right.
And I find myself giving in the same way. And that's how life, like, makes you laugh and see yourself.
Yeah.
I would be so annoyed that I thought my mother was an overgiver.
And then you see it all in yourself.
oh yeah. I see some other things too, you know. but yeah, and hard working, that comes from my grandfather. And believing so much in the village, that is directly from my family.
Yeah.
So they've been, you know, the Village Market, the name of it, it comes from It Takes a Village.
Right.
My master classes that I do in a city are called It Takes a Village series.
Mm, okay.
So that's where that comes from. And we all, whatever little tribe you came from, I came from, in Africa, do know that entrepreneurship is a part of our creation.
Our genetics.
The spirit of community. Yeah. Yes, our genetic makeup. Of collaboration, of community, of bringing the people together to gather. That's
right.
Who we are.
Yeah. I need to tap more into that. I'm glad you said that, because I was doing it so unconsciously, and my subconscious is telling me to do it unknowingly. And now when you say it, it's like, oh, okay. Maybe I need to do more. You know what I'm saying? Maybe it is my instincts that's telling me, you know, go out, do more. So, and then especially in these times, you know, where everything is so up in the air, you know, community is just extremely important.
Yeah, and I and you know, if it stays with you, you need to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when people ask me, you know, how did you know it was time to do the Village Market? Well, the Village Market told me it was time. And it kept telling me it was time.
Right.
You know, even when I didn't want it to be time.
Right, not just once a year. It was like, okay, you need to do it again. It was like, again?
And, right, I'm looking like, I know I heard the wrong message. Because I can't, I'm not supposed to do this four times a year.
That's what's
up. But it's apparent, you know, that this is what I'm, you know, what I'm supposed to do.
That's awesome. Outside of your parents, what are the other people who actually, or do you feel inspire you or motivate you to be just as great?
I have really good friends. You know, my friends financially supported the first Village Market.
Really?
And it was just, yeah, it was just, and I say this because so many people think you have to go get all these big investors, right?
Right.
To get something going. Or I have to have the capital to get things going. I had an idea. I told my closest friends. My closest friends funded my first idea.
That's awesome.
Was the Village Market. So they're the people who, when people invest in you,
right?
Like when they give you their hard-earned money and they trust you to do something with it, that was, I always say support is a verb. That is the greatest verb. So my friends and my strong community that's surrounding me, they really trust me to do the work. And my mentors, I have great mentors. They don't necessarily give me business advice, but they give me soul advice all the time.
Okay.
Because what comes with exposure is a lot of people gravitating towards you. And that can feel rather uncommon.
Mm-hmm.
And so that My mentors do a very good job of being a counsel for me for discernment and being a great counsel just to even vent with the pressure of having this big thing that I'm carrying.
Right. That's super. I'm so jelly about your friends right now. But that's what's up. So you told me earlier that you were going to Cuba tomorrow. What you going to Cuba
yes.
for?
I'm going to Cuba to not think about the Village Market and to not think about Young, Gifted, and Black and to not think about all the other responsibilities that I have. So I'm going to Cuba to unplug and to recharge and to
right.
Yeah, to be able to enjoy all of the labor of the work.
You deserve it. You deserve it. What are some of the other, what are your favorite places to go or what are your like, most energy, where does the energy really draw to you or like when you travel?
Oh, I've traveled a lot too. I go to places where I'm a nature girl.
Right.
So if I can go and hike, I like places that I can hike. I like places that I can ride my bike. I like places that I can do some rafting. So any place like that. You know, my friends tease me because I went to Vegas last year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were thinking, Key, you know you're not about to go time.
Right, you ain't going to go gambling, right.
right. And so when they saw the pictures of what I did, you know, I hiked the Colorado, I rafted the Colorado River.
Ooh.
Rafted down to the Hoover Dam and hiked the Red Canyon. They were like, you would go to Vegas if you would do that.
To be rooted to nature, right?
Right. It was like, who knew that was in Vegas?
Right, right.
but I love places like that. And I love I went to Tulum, Mexico a couple years ago. And it's such a beautiful little village.
Mm-hmm.
So I love places that have this rich in history and culture. And it doesn't have to be my history or culture.
Right.
But something about people being so connected to each other, that motivates and moves me so much. So I spend a great deal of my time in travel.
Beautiful. Yeah, that's the best way to do it. What would be your favorite quote, Bible scripture, or proverb that you probably tell yourself every day?
Every day, without hesitation, I say, all things are working together for my good. And I said, over and over throughout the day, even during stressful moments, I said, all things are working together for my good. All things are working together for my good. And that grounds me.
Right.
And that reminds me that something is always aspiring in my favor. and for the greater good of the work that's being done, because it can be extremely stressful. So I'm an affirmation type of girl.
Okay.
Especially words that make sense to me. I'm a words person. So I say that every day. On my Facebook, that's my, I guess, the banner. And my phone, that's the banner that all things are working together for my good.
That's what's up. Well, Dr. Lakeisha Hallman, I really appreciate you taking some time out to interview with us. Really potent information that you just dropped on us. And I also want to thank everyone who for actually listening. And you can definitely go check us out on YouTube. You can check us out on Podbeam under Bougie Black Brothers. And we're also on YouTube. Again, thanks for listening today, and have a great one.